Hey everyone, welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for this premiere of Season 6 of Amazing Race Canada. My name is Jessica Lise and I am here with my personal hero, Dan Heaton, to talk about everything that went down in Episode 1. Dan, what is a hero to you?
I think a hero is us, of course, because one, we are parents, and two, we are podcasters who watch this show and bring it to you. I mean, I think that's pretty good, right? You know, that's less awkward than the Matt was. I think I'm okay with this.
Yeah, this is a good answer. I mean, compared to everybody else, I think they had some time to prepare. I just kind of threw you in there and you were able to come up with something off the cuff. And I think that makes you the real hero. You know, podcasters are out there doing this thankless work and we're watching a show in a country we don't even live in, but actually, that's its own reward because this was a great premiere. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. And the great thing about this premiere, well, we had a crazy finish. But even before that, I was really enjoying it. It wasn't like you say, oh, just wait till the last 3 minutes or whatever. It was fun. I mean, premieres always move so fast, but I found that sometimes they're not good because they spend so long introducing the characters. They have to do a couple of tasks. All of a sudden, the team's gone. You're like, I barely knew that team. I didn't think that was the case here. I felt like they kind of balanced it well. We still had three tasks. We got to know the people a little bit, some more than others. Had some fun. Had a crazy finish. It's pretty good. You can't ask for much more in a premiere.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I never tell people if they want to start watching Amazing Race and they want to have one episode, I almost never tell them to just start with episode one of something. Like, watch something where you don't have as many people to keep track of without the knowledge that you're going to be losing some people you saw for 30 seconds. And this is a good premiere. Like, this is a good entry point to the show as a whole, I think, because you had a little bit of everything. You had some exciting tasks. You had a little bit of adrenaline in there. You had people getting lost, which we'll get to. You had a lot of different dynamics with people, and you had a photo finish, which was really one of the crazier first leg finishes. And I know this is something that we've seen very recently on Amazing Race US, but for my money, I had more adrenaline at this finish than I did at last season of Amazing Race US.
Yeah, it's interesting that that just happened too in the premiere of that season. But yeah, this was different. One, because I was worried about my, you know, my draft teams. But two, the fact that it wasn't just two teams. Like, a lot of sometimes you might have it where two teams are running, and that was cool. You had five teams and they got the five team split screen going for that. And literally they were all leaving for the pit stop at the same time, basically. I mean, I'm not sure. It could have been some weird editing there. But to have half of your teams after three tasks, after driving around, after various, you know, splits with gondolas and stuff, all going at the same time. I mean, the producers had to be like high-fiving each other like you couldn't believe at that point.
Yeah, and it's always such a tricky balance, I think, from a leg design standpoint, because you want all of your teams to be close enough together that there's drama. But if you make the tasks too easy, there's no mixing it up. And there was so much mixing it up. Like, at one point, we had Happy and Chewy in first place, and they had a really strong start to this leg. And then to have them go out, like, just steps from Joseph and Akash, that was really quite dramatic and quite hard to watch.
Yeah, because I felt really bad. You know, I would have felt bad for either team, almost any of these teams, because, you know, they all fought hard because the person, I mean, first you have, I mean, you got to jump and grab the beaver. You got to climb this pole. Even the rowing, all those tasks were tiring. And obviously navigating was not easy. So everyone who got there had worked. It wasn't like a case where teams, I mean, yes, teams got lost and such, but it wasn't a case where one team or two teams were just so bad. I mean, all the teams finished the tasks fairly quickly. And so you were going to feel terrible because they all wanted it so much and they seem like fun teams. That's the thing. There was no group where I went, please, can they please knock that team out? Please just delete. You know, I look at these teams going, oh, I want to learn more about these, some of them more than others. But, and I love the fact too, that there's only 10. Like, after doing the first season, season three we did together had 12. 10 is so much easier than 12. Talk about making a premiere fun. I think there's even a huge difference between 10 and 11 for some reason. It's like, yes, there aren't as many teams to get eliminated and whatnot, but it does make the premiere seem less nuts when you have this number, I think.
Yeah, I would be inclined to agree with that. I think it really gives you just like that much more time with each team and you get to know them that much better. Although I think as we'll discuss, I think we got a listener question about this. We want to talk about the editing on Amazing Race Canada and how it's a little bit more languid, I would say, than the US version. So in that regard, I think we spent a lot less time on the tasks in favor of getting to know the 10 teams that we had. So you had that going for it as well. Like, I feel like I know all of these teams now. Like, I know what they're about and who they are in a way that the website certainly didn't teach us.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, we drafted teams and we did our preview and some takes on teams I thought we were pretty right on, but then there's others and I see them for literally like 2 minutes and I'm like, oh my God, like Leanne and Mar. I look at them and I'm like, those two are freaking amazing. And this is before they finish first. It's just, there's people that right off the bat you see and you're like, or even, you know, Dylan and Kwame, you look at them and you're like, these guys are kind of funny. They're different than I expected a bit. It's just, it's fun to get to know these teams. And like you said, with the editing, that's the thing that, and I hate to make this Canada versus US because the US has had a few good seasons in a row. They're doing okay. But I feel like the US sometimes moves too fast. Like, somehow they move faster, they do fewer tasks, but it's like there's this need to like show 20 minutes of a task. It's like, no, we get the idea. They've got to climb this pole or they've got to jump and grab a beaver. We don't have to see every little inch. Like, especially they did well with the crab task, which would have been really boring if we saw them all rolling around for 10 minutes. Instead, we spent time with the people, which is better. I mean, there's a few goofy moments, like for some reason, like Mar and Joseph just like gave each other a big hug like we saw for a minute, or just like teams interacting, you know, having fun, talking about Happy Gilmore, just a lot of little things that also with enough teams where I didn't automatically know who was getting eliminated either.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It felt like maybe the stakes were a little lower, but we were okay with having the stakes be a little lower.
Right. Yeah. Because it's one of those things where teams seem to be having fun with it. And I was very happy after the mat that there wasn't really anything about heroes involved with this. I mean, I think maybe they're going to have more physical kind of competitive tasks that might have to do with that, but nothing against heroes. I like heroes. But it was nice. Like once they got rolling, you're like, this feels like just a good episode of the show. And I'm good with it.
Yeah, well, let's rewind. Let's go back to the top of the hour. We started out in Victoria, British Columbia, which the race has been two before, but we didn't spend that much time there. So it was kind of truncated. We really just had a spectacular starting line at Hatley Castle. And there's not much remarkable about this, except I did like the little twist at the beginning where John tells them that they have to search the grounds for their bags and their clue. And now granted, this wasn't an onerous task because there's not that many places you can hide that stuff. And they get the clue and it says, search for your car. And oh, spoiler alert, your car's in the parking lot. What a great place to hide it.
Yeah. At first, when they said that, when he said they had to search, I thought, oh my gosh, they've separated. Everyone's bags are in a different place. Like they've really got to search. This is going to be kind of random. No, you really just follow everybody else and you would find it. And same with the cars. Now, granted, some teams did get out ahead, which mostly did not make a difference because almost everyone made the ferry, but it did add a little bit of excitement more than, hey, your bags are right there. Go get them. Go get in a car. At least they had to do something. And when you're nervous, teams can, you know, screw up or fall behind. But I like every little step they can do because you never know what's going to happen. A team might just get confused or, you know, get lost finding their bags. You know, weird things can happen on the show and that's fun. So, and this was a cool starting line. And I was just excited to see all these teams. And, you know, John was really, really thrilled about telling him about, you know, their new Chevrolets they were going to get. And everyone was thrilled about that. Got lots of sponsors this year. We're just ready to go.
Did you think that John was doing a little bit of a Jeff Probst in there?
Yeah, it felt a little more awkward.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, not awkward. Like, I felt like, you know, John is, I feel like, really natural when he's him doing the skydiving and getting, or, you know, not skydiving, the grabbing the beaver and being like, nailed it or whatever. That stuff is so funny and like is so natural. But him having to like stand and give like dialogue like that or something, it did seem like he was trying a little too hard to really like be pumped about it. And it's like, no, just chill. People like you. You're good. So I did notice that a bit. I felt he was maybe overdoing it a bit. Also, the heroes thing, like with the interview, that was really like Jeff Probst, and not in the best way, I guess.
You know, it was like the first season of this show. He really was trying hard not to do a Phil impression, but he couldn't help it. And I think now he's kind of overcorrected over the course of the seasons. He's really let himself come out a lot more and kind of made this role his own. And now we're veering into, well, now he's doing another host. And I don't know how I feel about that. So I hope that he loosens up a little bit as the season goes on. And I hope it wasn't like a conscious production directive to say, okay, John, we need you to be a little more Jeff Probst here, because I don't watch Amazing Race so that I can see people doing bad Jeff Probst impressions.
Yeah. And I don't really need there to be some overarching theme that kind of like, you know, that's why at least I appreciate it on the mat. He didn't ask about heroes. I am sure we'll get more of it, especially when some teams get eliminated. I mean, I guess we saw a little bit when they finished, but still, I'm okay with here and there people talking about what they do for a living, because that can be interesting and make, you know, makes me know them more and their stories. But we don't want to, like, you know, because Probst is amazing working on the fly in a similar way. But those types of interviews, it's just like, we've only got 43 minutes. Let's do this. Let's go.
Yeah. And Probst has a monopoly on asking the question, want to know what you're playing for. Just saying, John, you know, we love you, but no.
Don't do it. But, you know, on a positive note, I still think he's an awesome host. Like you said, the first season, I mean, it was better than Australia, but still he was a little bit awkward and a little bit stilted, but you can tell he's having a blast out there. And I think, like you said, I mean, he's, you know, he's Olympian. He's not, you know, he didn't grow up his whole life being trained as a broadcaster. So he's most natural when he's just doing physical stuff and being like looking at the camera, like, can you believe I'm the host?
Yeah, he really is a great audience surrogate in that regard. So, yeah, everybody's off to the ferry. I think it's a little too early for teams to be getting lost. And yet this is exactly what happens to more than one team.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, what I can say is that this is why I love the self-driving. Not because I want to see teams just be terrible, but they will often do, but it's so much more interesting to have them do that than hop in a cab. In Canada, we usually see a lot of driving because especially with having the sponsor that they do with Chevy, but it just creates some sort of crazy things, especially you have a team like Dylan and Kwame, who basically killed every challenge this week, who still have a weakness, apparently driving. It's, you know, they missed the ferry that I'm pretty certain the Amazing Race producers set up to make sure that nobody missed the ferry. Like, I mean, there's a 2-hour break between ferries. The fact that everyone else made it, even the other team that got lost, the fact that they missed it, I mean, who knows how lost they were? I mean, that's crazy. But thankfully, they did wisely put another kind of, the way they set up the gondolas was that even if a team missed the ferry, they were guaranteed not to be by themselves.
Yeah, but how screwed is that ninth place team?
Yeah, and that's where, you know, neither team ended up actually getting eliminated, but you did have that case where we didn't really get a good gauge on when they showed up and how long they had to wait for Dylan and Kwame to show up. But, you know, since it wasn't a designated start time, I mean, they said they had to wait 2 hours for the ferry, you know, even with them getting lost, I still think that they probably waited a long time.
There couldn't have been more than like 5 to 10 minutes between those gondolas. So that last place team, it depends on how far behind that next ferry was. But yeah, there's probably a little bit of a delay in there, but not enough of one to count. It was gratifying that, I mean, that would have been the worst premiere ever, right? Have a team miss the ferry and be so far behind that they're never in it. And we always get an episode like that at some point on most seasons of The Amazing Race. But to have it be the first one is kind of a bummer and not that fun to watch.
Yeah, and I was nervous for those guys because, I mean, to start off that far behind, it was just, you look at it and you're like, how are they going to respond? But that is where the show, I mean, you have, like we talked about at the top with the tasks, you've got 3 tasks and none of them are just jump out of the plane. There's something to each one that they could mess up or that they could not, or that could be just physically hard. So you give teams, even the teams that ended up in the back, a pretty legitimate chance, because if you look at how it finishes, those guys were fourth place. I mean, it's, and granted, so they had plenty of opportunities to prove they could do it. And that's what you want to see. You don't want a team to do one thing wrong and never have a chance. And that's bad leg design when that happens.
That's true. And I never love these single file, like everybody gets one shot and then they have to go back to the back of the line kind of things. But in this case, I think it was okay because it did kind of keep everybody up on top there for a while, especially if you missed that. But it also gave an advantage if you got it on the first try. I liked this task with an asterisk because I do think we've seen this task before. This looked exactly to me like the first task of the Amazing Race 28 finale, the one that kind of screwed Tyler and Corey. And we got a lot of listener questions about this, but it sure seemed like that Beaver was moved closer or further away depending on the height of the person doing the jumping, which may have accounted for some of the people missing their Beaver.
Yeah, they must have done that because there were a few where it looked like literally they were jumping a few inches from their hands. Now, granted, that could be the camera angles and whatnot. But then you see Adam, who's, you know, like I mentioned, is like, I don't know how tall he is, but he's got to be like 6'5 or something. He's a tall dude. Miss pretty handily. I mean, you look at it and you're like, that guy could not have had the exact same reach unless he just, it didn't look like he just fell down or something, as some of the people that were probably over a foot shorter than he is. So I understand that there has to be a switch, but it's weird that the people who miss mostly, you know, were some people that were not the shortest. But yeah, that's the thing about this task is it's good TV because, I mean, in general, because you see, one, they've got to catch something. And two, if they miss, they got to fall down this entire ravine. And it's like people, it's dramatic. There's drama to it. So that's good. The downside, like we saw in the finale, is in that case, it was so much worse because you only had three teams. So basically, a team hits it, they're off to the races. They're never going to get caught. Here, at least with 10 teams, it's not as bad, but it did make a huge difference. If Chewy had hit that the first time, it would have, I mean, obviously they don't get eliminated. They had a chance. They still had a chance at the end, but I agree with you. I think it's good for the visuals, but you know, it's not like the fairest or, you know, most even-handed one, I guess. It's so hard to know because we don't have all the information too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like you said, I think the big improvement on this over the US version is that it's not a finale task. And I think you get away with that when you have 10 people that have to do the task because it doesn't automatically knock you out if you don't get it on the first try. And I think it's okay to have these kind of flashy tasks. Like you always need a flashy task to kick it off. And I would say maybe putting a hokey little stuffed animal up there instead of the clue. Like I get it. We need to have one of the official animals of Canada and it gives you a little cute thing to hold on to. And you have to have the Foley artists dropping in that little sound effect, which everybody was very happy with. But yeah, there are pros and cons, like all tasks on The Amazing Race. But I thought it gave everybody a good, it kicked everybody off and it didn't, nobody was so bad at it. I think everybody got it on the second try at least. So nobody was so bad at it that it just eliminated them right out the gate.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder too, we did not see it, but did, you know, because remember on the finale, I think eventually they did move it. And I don't know. I have no information about this, but I do wonder if for the second one, somehow you might have gotten some sort of slight adjustment, maybe. I don't know. But it's interesting because Chewy missed it. And then the next five people got it. And I started to think, well, maybe this is really easy. And he just screwed up. Like, you know, until Adam missed it, where I went, oh, okay, this is hard again. Because then, you know, then Akash missed it and other things. But for a little bit, I was like, maybe this is kind of a gimme thing where you just grab Barry the Beaver and that's it.
Well, that could be, it could be like you were saying with the fairy. And like, I think most tasks on the Amazing Race finales are set up where it's like they don't expect you to have to do it more than once. But this one, I think they expected a fair few people to screw it up and have to do it twice. So I think maybe they don't expect somebody to have to do it 10 or 15 times.
Oh man, that would be so painful. It would be dark because I mean, you got to think the amount of time to like come get all the way back up the mountain and everything. It's like they probably were thinking twice. Like, I wonder if they made it easy enough where, I mean, too, like it can't be good on your body to keep having to fall down that giant giant ravine there. So, but it was a good start. You know, it was, I don't mind it again, like you said, because they made it hard enough, like Canada does. And it's a good view. It's still more exciting than skydiving.
Yeah, I like having a little skill mixed in with my thrill. So they go to a lumberjack festival. And when you see a lumberjack festival, you always know that whatever is coming next is probably pretty physically grueling. And sure enough, it's another roadblock. And I think at this point, Dan, you have to start assuming that every first leg is going to have two roadblocks. And maybe it starts to behoove these teams to have your quote unquote weaker member do the first task so that you can save the more physically strong person for that second task. Because whatever that second task is, it's probably going to be a little more demanding.
Yeah. And I don't get the impression that really any of these teams did that. Some of the teams are pretty evenly matched, so it's hard to say. But in most cases, I think teams just come up and they're like, hey, you're strong. I mean, unless someone's frightened of heights, you know, at the beginning. But in general, they're like, put the strong one on first. We got to get ahead. And in most cases, it didn't hurt them that much. I know that Melissa struggled a bit, but then they were in first, so that wasn't a big deal. But it really made the difference with Martina. And I don't know if Phil is like the strongest person ever, but Martina, you know, she's waiting for the sewing challenge. You know, it's going to happen. But right now, this was tough to watch, but I'm glad she made it. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I mean, we can pause here to appreciate Phil and Martina, who I think we are looking at Lucy and Amelia 2.0 here.
Yeah, and I enjoyed them. I mean, they were even when they pulled up to the ferry and she was just up there like, hey, everybody, and like bringing them all in, like greeting them like she was working for the show. And people are like, whoa, she's very energetic. But she has a really cool energy. And you were spot on with what we talked about in the premiere. So I love the fact that there's somebody who openly admits too. It's not like someone who's like, no, I'm really strong. Like she openly admits, she's like, I don't really work out. I don't really do anything. But seeing her do it was much more satisfying than watching, you know, no offense to anybody, but with Kwame or somebody just basically climb it up like it's nothing.
Yeah, that's true. But on the other hand, whenever you have a team like this, it's like you had at least a few weeks before this show kicked off. I don't know what you were expecting. If you are a super fan of the show, you should know that the majority of your tasks are not going to be sewing tasks. So that's a little bit on her.
Oh, yeah. I don't disagree. I think it's impressive that she made it through. And luckily, they were pretty far. I mean, because Phil got the beaver, it sounds really weird to say that, but Phil got the beaver, that they were pretty far up there. So still ended up, you know, only in sixth place after that. So it was, you know, after that task. So that's good. But you're right. I mean, there's kind of a case where, I mean, Lucy and Amelia were so endearing and actually at some point were better than we would have expected on task. But here you do look at them because Canada is not easy. I mean, we've seen teams that don't seem that physically fit do okay, but there is always a point, and I don't know where that point will be this season, where a team that struggles or that isn't as physically fit just hits a wall. I hope that doesn't happen here because I really like them, but it could at some point.
Yeah, I would not be surprised to see it happen, but it's also like they're so excited to be there. And I think like just their sheer determination and all of that positive energy is going to carry them pretty far. And as we saw, and you know, I actually got one of our listeners called me out on this because I frequently will point out those jump cuts to commercial where somebody is doing a task and they're like, this is impossible, I can't do this. And then you have the commercial and you come back and they say, oh, right, I can do this, and they do it. And we got one of those in Martina, and it was a little more dramatic than that. I never for one minute believed that she was not going to finish that task.
Yeah, no. And the sad thing is I sometimes fall for it. Like my brain just sits there and I'm like, well, maybe they're done. Maybe she's not going to make it. And then it happens. And then I feel really dumb for doing that. I'm like, yes, they got me again. Every time. I'm never fooled by the heights ones because I feel like the people always are going to eventually. Well, not always, but in general, you know, there's always a water slide that can stop someone. But in general, they're going to do the jump. Something like this, I was just a little nervous that somehow she just was so exhausted she couldn't do it. But at that point, it's like, man, sit there for an hour. You know, it's like, I mean, it's not comfortable, but she was pretty far along. So I agree with you. It was going to happen.
Yeah, she was practically at the top at the time we saw that clip. So I think it really just boils down to she was exhausted and in pain. And I don't love hearing "I can't" come out of anybody's mouth at any time. And I think we've talked about this. It's a little hair splitty, but we've seen teams that carry on and complain and wail, but "I can't" never comes out of their mouths. And for that reason, they end up going a lot further than you think they're going to go. So that worries me a little bit, especially on the first leg. But, you know, to her credit, she went to the place she needed to go. She thought about it. She said, "I'm going to do it for Phil." And she did it. And it was probably the Tylenol push through the pain moment.
Yes, of course. But and that's true, though. The fact that she did it, too, maybe then she'll, the next time something comes up that seems hard, she won't immediately go, "I can't do this either." Because, you know, she can look back and go, "Hey, I was on that crazy pole. I've never done anything like that in my life. And I made it." So maybe it's going to drive them forward. And you're right, too, what you said about positivity, because people that are just so pumped to be there and just seem to just kind of at times can just seem to glide through the show. Part of that could be editing, like they're, you know, but part of it is just things just come up. Adversity doesn't seem so big. And they also don't sometimes come in with big egos, like come in like with arrogance to say, "We are going to win six legs or eight legs." People are just like, "Yeah, I'm amazed that we're here." And they get to sixth, seventh, whatever, fifth, and they're still amazed. That's the Lucy and Amelia thing. They just kept looking at each other like, "How are we still here?" And that can take you a long way.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at this point to see Phil and Martina be that team. And where we're sitting here and they're in the final four and we're like, "How did they do that? How are they even still here?" And they're just like, "Wow, look at all this cool stuff we got to see."
Yeah, well, I mean, Simi and Ope, you know, had several moments of, you know, a few seasons ago, like where I thought they're done. They can't even do the task. And then they were in the final four and had a good chance. So it can happen. Teams will do that. And especially since you drafted them in our draft, I assume that Phil and Martina will do very well.
Of course. Yes. I retroactively willed them into this spot.
There was one point where there were four teams that were 7 through 10 and they were all ones I had picked. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Like they had the five tiles up on the screen. Yeah. I'm like, "Oh, look, it's Team Dan."
Basically, you could swap out Phil and Martina for Nancy and Melissa. They could just put out Team Older Than Dan, which is not as old as it used to be now. But, you know, I was just like, "I'm going to lose a team this week." But regardless, I enjoyed the episode even as I looked at it and went, "Oh, felt like this year would be different." I really did. It's the same every year, Jess. It never ends.
But and yet, I haven't heard "I can't" come out of your mouth one time.
Well, you know, I guess I would do well in the Amazing Race. I don't know. You know, I mean, I did pick the team that is the most in love of any team that's ever been on the history of the show. So I'm feeling good about them. They survived. I was getting nervous.
Yeah, well, that I think maybe here's a good point to talk about Courtney and Adam, because that might be the biggest surprise of the night. I think we were expecting this sort of bland Barbie and Ken experience, and it turns out they're total goofballs. They can't navigate worth anything, and they can't extract their lips from each other long enough to really compete. I was so shocked at how kind of this is the Dodo music team. How is that happening?
She's funny too. She's got a dry humor that I think is really funny. But yeah, there was a point where in the second roadblock they were dead last, like no other teams there, and I was like, they're getting eliminated. The team that I picked to win is the team that looks like the most obvious Amazing Race winner is getting knocked out in the first leg. And it's happened before. We've seen teams that look like that. It's not unprecedented on an Amazing Race season for a team that looks like they have it all to do that. But on the personality side, I mean, they also were rubbing noses at one point, and like, you know, it was the whole thing. I mean, we saw a lot of them though. So I think they will recover. They ended up finishing, you know, seventh, I believe. And I think this is one of those situations, like they're not Gino and Jesse, obviously, but Gino and Jesse had a leg really early in their season where they finished 10th, I think, or 9th out of 11. I don't know if this is that case, but I do feel like these two are going to be more fun than we expected, sort of, and also probably will recover and do okay.
Yeah, I liked that they were much funnier than I expected. it's great when you see the team that you think is going to have the least amount of substance, and it turns out that they are veritable gold mines. So I'm excited to see them however long we have them. And based on this performance, I might have to downgrade my assessment. But hey, we usually have the same winner pick. We are frequently not wrong. We'll see how it shakes out.
Well, I jinxed them in the past again. That's what happens. But regardless, they did. I give them credit when they got to the crab task and they were amazed that everyone was still there. They did power through it very quickly, and they were among that first group that came in. So that's a good sign, because teams that survive in tough situations are the ones that, when they're down, there's two teams left or three teams, they're near the back. They recognize that they need to crank it to another gear, and teams that get eliminated are ones that just kind of move at the same speed.
That's definitely true. They pulled it out when it was necessary to pull it out. And I think one of the most gratifying moments in any Amazing Race perennially is when you have that team that has no idea where they are. They are certain that they are hours behind everybody else. And then they roll up to a task and everybody's still there. And it's just like this happy reunion of, we are not out of this. We're not dead. And so I'm happy. I was happy when that happens.
Yeah. So, yeah, speaking of the task, the third task is not a roadblock or a detour, but a task where they have to find a crab in a bay. It seems more like a needle in a haystack kind of task, which it sort of was. But there was an extra trick to this one, Jess, which involved a judge and what is regulation size. So I'm not sure I totally understand, but it did add some extra drama to this one.
I guess so. This really seemed like there was no way you would be able to gauge the size of a crab within an eighth of an inch as you pulled them up. Like, that was just not happening. But I want to back up for a second, and I want to call out John Montgomery. And John Montgomery's weird pronunciations of words has been a topic that we have enjoyed exploring in seasons past, but I got to talk about the way this man pronounces buoy.
So I didn't even catch this. How far off was he with this? I missed it.
He kind of gave it a little bit of a Flavor Flav spin. He was referring to them as buoys.
Oh, yeah. And trying to make buoy a really cool word, it's not going to work. I don't know how that's a cool word, John. It's just, I don't know, like I'm speaking to him directly here. I really need to. John, when you're listening to our podcast, please work on this for next season.
Hey, stranger things have happened, man.
Yes, that's true. But no, that's fun. That is the thing that I really like about him, is he's kind of dorky. And that's, I mean, Phil's dorky in a different way, but it still seems a little above it all. In a slight way, Phil is. John, in a slightly different way, seems to be like, he's just a goofy guy. And I think his personality, like we mentioned with Adam and Courtney, kind of also fits with how a lot of people are on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's an innate, I think maybe being Canadian is a little bit dorky. And I love Canada. You know, I wish I was Canadian. You know, I wish I had that innate dorkiness. Yeah, it definitely, it fits the personality of the show, and it kind of gives it a little extra Canadian-ness. I want to call out a tweet from Princess Pinecone, who tweeted at me after I called out John's weird pronunciation. She said, "I'll admit it's a word I've never been certain about how to pronounce, so I got excited to have confirmation from John, and then the scene progressed, and I am nowhere nearer in knowing how to say it."
He just confused her more. Everyone's saying it differently. But yeah, that's where you get out the Google and you type in pronounce boy. Now I can't even say it.
Buoy.
Pronounce buoy. You got to just power through it. But it says something about the task, that the thing we're most focusing on is how to pronounce buoy right now. but yeah, it was there wasn't that much to talk about really beyond. Beyond the judge saying that is not regulation size. And I agree with you. How? Yes, if you get a crab that's super small, but in general, kind of hard to figure out. The most, I guess, noteworthy thing is Nancy and Melissa kind of rowing halfway down the river and then coming back. But that's about it. They're really, I mean, some teams got it and some didn't. And it seemed to be kind of random.
Well, and we're missing the other singular, remarkable thing. And I'm glad they kept this in because, you know, we don't need to see a lot of this task. Crabs is crabs. But there was one crab that I think took a little too much offense to being told he was not regulation size. He strikes back at that judge. And I thought for sure we were going to get our first bleep profanity of the season from that guy.
Yeah, because you're so used to the judges being so stoic and just being like, sorry, that is not the regulation size. And that guy was pretty annoyed. He was already like just surprised. He's like, oh, so apparently maybe this judge is not such an expert on how to handle crabs. But you know, that was a good moment. I did appreciate that, you know, to add a little bit of life to it and make this task somewhat more fun. But it did seem like, you know, judging by the fact that so many teams finished at the same time, it did seem like that once you kind of figured out there was a little bit of a learning curve, or it just was so quick getting back and forth that teams were closer than it seemed.
It looked like there were a lot of buoys in a very small area. So if you got that wrong, you could get right back out there and grab another one pretty easily.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's not going to go down as the greatest task in the history of the Amazing Race Canada. The main benefit of it beyond the biting judge was that it was designed in a way that it got everybody together for what turned out to be kind of a crazy race to the finish.
Yeah, that's right. We get to the Mine Museum and it was really a free for all. Like you had half the teams fully in danger of being eliminated. And that was really a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and the fact that you had three show up at the same time first, and I actually called it wrong. Adam and Courtney were eighth, but you had Zainab and Monica be sixth after being lost for much of the leg, which is pretty amazing. And Martine and Phil finishing seventh. So all three of those came in, and you could tell they were all just super thrilled that they were not last. Because when you come in like that, you don't want to have a situation like we had at the end. And that was fun to see. They all seemed happy.
Yeah, and it was nice that they were able to hang out and watch the last little bits of drama unfold. And that was pretty heartbreaking. I mean, Danny, I think you mentioned to me before we started recording that you actually gasped when you saw this happen, and I did the same. I was not expecting that. Like, I thought it was going to be photographic trickery they frequently do, where they show one team running in from one direction and the other team running in from the other direction. They're never in the same frame, but it really was that close. It really was that heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was crazy because, yeah, both of us have watched so many seasons. And even we saw the three teams kind of caravan there that went 6 through 8. But then they showed Joseph and Akash getting directions. But then they hadn't shown Chewy and Happy. So my thought is, okay, we're getting set up probably for Chewy and Happy to be last because we haven't seen them. And then Joseph and Akash are going to think they're last. They're going to show up and they're going to be ninth. They're going to go, oh my goodness, I can't believe we made it. None of that happened. Like, that was where I was a little surprised. Because at first you see them running. And then when you see both teams run for that door, and it's like, oh my God. And it was even before they had the weird zoom in on the clues that got dropped, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a moment. But just to have it be, and to have the teams split up, that's another thing too, where you had, I believe, I haven't done the photo finish again, but I believe you had one from each team and then the second member of Joseph and Akash show up and actually make it them survive, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And that's even worse. I think like you got to feel like Chewie's really going to feel that. Like that's going to be a really upsetting thing because he's now going to feel kind of personally responsible.
Yeah, though I'm sure he feels that way a little bit about the beaver, though I know I read an exit interview with them where they blamed the crabs for the loss. I mean, not any crab in particular, but just that task. But yeah, I mean, when you're that close and it's just a situation where it's like, gosh, it's so bam bam like that. It's hard to even say. And I assume, speaking of the clues which came up, I assume that Chewy and Happy dropped their clues, which then would mean even if they had finished ahead of them, they would have still been eliminated. That's my assumption, the fact that we saw it, because they needed to have their clues in order to check in.
Do they, though?
See, that's what I don't know. I feel like there's been a point. You're right. I don't know if they do. Well, why would they show that if it didn't matter, though? I guess, was it just a way to show the, because now I'm thinking about it, there's been seasons where teams lost their clue and then found where they were going, like in the season 2 US finale. And they didn't keep them from checking in because Will and Tara from checking in because they didn't have the clue. So, I mean, that's a long way back, but you're right. Yeah, I may have misinterpreted.
Well, it depends. I think I've heard conflicting reports on what actually happens here. Like, I've heard from some teams that they checked in at the end of a leg and then they had to hand in all of their clues in order to be fully checked in. It was like part of the pit stop process. But then other teams I've heard, like, don't even really care. Like, they tend not to check up on that stuff. It's like, if you show up at the right spot, it doesn't matter what you did with your clue. And some of the teams, of course, have stolen clues and not given back certain clues and had a couple to keep as souvenirs, which is discouraged, as I understand it. But I do not know if officially you have to turn in all of your clues. And I'm hoping, like, I know we got a couple of racers that listen to the podcast, and if they haven't been completely turned off by our lengthy rambling discussion of John Montgomery's Jeff Probstian demeanor at the starting line, maybe they'll weigh in and let us know if that was the case. But that dropped clue, maybe it was just to make us think there might be a little extra something on the end, but it seems like a lot of effort for something that had no payoff. Like Chekhov's clue there, like, it didn't go off, man.
Yeah, and that's where I was nervous, because when he comes up and Joseph and Akash were there, I thought he's going to tell them they're ninth and they don't have their clues. He's going to say, you're the ninth team to arrive. However, you didn't bring your clues, so you're eliminated. And that's where I was like, oh my gosh. Luckily, there was no weird kind of dramatic pause there by John, but that kind of freaked me out. Freaked me out in a way. I guess it almost added to the tension. It made it so memorable. But then when it gets done, you're like, wait, what? That didn't mean anything? What? It's a little strange.
Yeah, or maybe it was just the cameraman being artsy. He's like, I will make a little, like, I'll make a little diorama here in front of the mining museum, and we'll shoot these clues in soft focus against the backdrop of British Columbia or something.
Yeah, who knows? But it did. I would love it. Yeah, if someone who was there at the time or you know, involved somehow could give us a heads up, even if you can't like tweet officially or something. I'm just so curious. You know, we won't tell them that you told us. You know, we won't publish it.
Yeah, or even if you were on another season, you know, your obligation to CTV is over. You can tweet at us. I'm sure nobody's going to get mad.
Yeah, no, I think it's safe. So yeah, there's a lot of teams we haven't talked about at all. So I don't know if we should mention a few of the other teams here before we get into questions.
I think we should start by talking about the most recent eliminees, Chewy and Happy, because they were really funny. And I'm kind of bummed that we're not going to get to see more one-liners as we go along, because I thought the line in particular that I want to call out is during the second roadblock, when you had Happy going, who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? And Chewy's response was the Maury Povich impression to say, you are the father. I thought that was great.
They were a lot of fun. Yeah. And we kind of called this out a little bit in the preview that I thought they would be. I mean, you bring in guys with nicknames of Chewy and Happy, you kind of know what you're getting, but they were fun in kind of a nice, cool, understated way, not in a, hey, look at us, we're crazy. It was more in the one-liners, and the one-liners are what we like here, I know. So the thing about it was, is I sad they're gone, but I'm sad, would have been sad anyone is gone. So it's one of those tough situations, but those guys I felt could have brought a lot of fun to the podcast, which, as we know, Jess, is what's important.
Well, that's why I do it.
we want the right teams to go far so we can make jokes and talk about them. And we, you know, this, it's all about us.
It really, like, they're making this show for the entertainment of two people that don't even live in their country.
Yes. Who aren't able to watch it live on the right station. But regardless, it's a sad moment. I was kind of hoping maybe this would be one of those kind of, oh, the first leg is a non-elimination, which don't bother me at all. I'd much rather have it now than have a bunch later, because then you have more time to get to know the teams. So unfortunately, I know they try and mix it up and not do that all the time.
I'm okay with it. I don't love the non-elimination on the first leg. It always feels like a little bit of a letdown. I need to shed some blood immediately.
I want people to fall right now. So, but yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I think, though, looking at the board, how much should we read into the placements here? Because if you really look at the top five, there was obviously a pretty big split there between the two groups. Are we to assume then that our winners or our top teams are coming from that top group? Because the top two teams in particular were very strong. And then the next few all kind of just, as I said, kind of glided right through the episode once Dylan and Kwame found the fairy.
I think it's really hard to make a winner prediction after one leg. A lot of teams will lose momentum and a lot of teams will find their stride. So I think it's not unheard of for a team that comes in like fifth or sixth or seventh place on the first leg to end up starting to pulling out the first place finishes. Once you get into legs 3 and 4, all of a sudden they're out in front all the time and they're unstoppable and everybody's describing them as the huge threat. They don't necessarily have to be the huge threat from minute one.
Right. And it does take some teams a little while to find their sea legs. So I'm not one to say, okay, these are the top three, because I don't really believe that. Plus, I know Adam and Courtney are going to win. So this is kind of a moot discussion anyway. But it's going to be fun. I'm curious because we see a lot of strong teams, especially some strong female teams, which will be fun to see. And who knows what's going to happen. So should we hit on more or should we do some questions?
I think we should jump right to the questions, because I think the next thing that we would organically be discussing plays into the most commonly asked question that we got this week, which was basically, how far off were our predictions? Who has surprised us the most?
Yeah, and we got a few of those, like Ron Chan and Matt Stewart on Facebook. But basically, for me, I mean, we talked about Adam and Courtney already. To me, I'm going to name one on each side. I will have to say again, Leanne and Mar, and I don't know if they're going to win, because I mean, what I liked about them was, one is this, how amazed they were by winning and how they were basically crying at the mat. I mean, I hate to be the obvious one and pick that team as one of the teams that surprised me. I thought they'd be solid, but they really killed the tasks. On the other side for me, Zainab and Monica, I thought they would be super strong, and they are strong. But their navigation issues could be something that, if they do a lot of self-driving, they got lost twice. In one point, they like somehow ended up back in Vancouver when they didn't need to be. They could be in trouble if that's something that's going to continue.
Yeah, I don't know how confident I'd feel if I were lost at sea and they were looking for me.
Yeah, because their navigation was not so good. But who's beyond that? Who surprised you?
Well, I'm surprised that we don't call out the team that you were right on and I was wrong on, Dan. Like, I'm not wrong very often. You got to take these as they come. But Nancy and Melissa, I completely wrote off and they beasted their way through this leg.
I had a feeling I almost picked them first, because I don't know why. I mean, I look at it and I know there's the age thing. But if they hadn't gone the wrong way and gotten a little messed around on the crab task, they would have won the leg. They were very close. And I don't know if they've got the, Megan and Natalie, you know, if they're going to be that good. But I think they could be really strong. And they also, of course, get to be the cowboys or the cowgirls for this and get their own theme song, which that's going to be fun this season. So I didn't realize I knew they did barrel racing, but I wasn't sure that the show would play them up that much as the cowgirls. But we should also mention one other thing about Melissa, which we suspected. I'll let you lead into it. But there's something about Melissa that is interesting in terms of, again, Mr. Montgomery.
Well, I think the interesting thing here is that there are a couple of things they called out on the mat that, if this were Amazing Race US, they would sweep this under the rug and pretend it wasn't true. But both of these situations, they were very upfront about. Thing number one, obviously, is that these two people don't know each other. They basically became teammates through like a Facebook comment thread. And thing number two, which you are alluding to here, Melissa is friends with John Montgomery, and they probably know each other better than she knows her own teammate.
Yeah, and that's good that you brought that up, because I even mentioned in the preview that I didn't think they knew each other that well, but I didn't think, like, they basically, it could almost be like the US season 29 with the two of them. I mean, they know, like, I think they both respect each other, but it's basically like they don't know each other at all. I mean, yes, they've met a few times and they have some similar interests, which help, but that's stunning. And you're right. I was another thing that I was shocked that they even showed a picture of Melissa with John, where it looked like they were like best friends. It wasn't just like, yeah, we know each other. I mean, it seemed like, you know, that they're like really good friends. John's like, yeah, I could tell you some stories about her. It's like, whoa. Yeah, the editing is the real surprise there. Because the show, I like that the show leans into it, though, because if not, the big fans are going to know anyway. And then, you know, it's like when the US version tried to make someone in a relationship that wasn't. I mean, that's not fun. That just makes it seem cheap. It's like, let's just show the people who they are.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting angle, too. Like, this was something we talked about this like way before we even had the blind date season of Amazing Race US, where I said maybe it would be an interesting thing to have one team be strangers and everybody else has a pre-existing relationship. The Biggest Loser did that one season, and it was really interesting to see these two people have to work together while everybody else had their own existing dynamics. So maybe this is something, if we lean into it, we get something new out of this relationship. And I mean, I think the arc is pretty predictable. They're going to go out and like the last thing they say is going to be like, we didn't know each other coming into the race, but now I've made a friend for life, or something stupid like that. But for now, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And it's going to be extra interesting if John keeps like needling her on the mat about this, like, oh yeah, Melissa, this is sort of like that time that we were in the bar and you did the body shot. And she's going to be like, stop it, John. They don't need to know about this. This could be fun.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be cool. And they do seem to be a strong team. And like, really, if I look at the teams that like beyond, I mean, team that finished first, Todd and Anna look like they were barely on the screen, but they just like drifted into third place. So that's going to be interesting. And Taylor and Courtney, we didn't see much of either. So those teams, it's hard to say. But beyond Nancy and Melissa, the team that impressed me the most for TAS was Dylan and Kwame, who just basically did what we kind of expected and just like blitzed the TAS. But they're going to be a team to watch, too, especially when people start looking at things like U-turns and such.
And especially when we leave the country and they're Gino and Jesse 2.0 at navigation.
Well, that's the thing, because if they got away with missing the ferry, but you when you get a few teams further down and you're not basically in Canada, that's going to be the challenge. But I was surprised by a lot of teams. I think there's going to be a lot of mixing and mixing of placements here going forward.
Yeah, and I like that. It's no fun when one team dominates everything. So it'll be great to see where that ends up. So what else we got for questions? Let's go through here. We answered the thing about the beavers, which was the second most asked question.
Yeah, basically. And then we had some questions about the finish, but I think we covered most of those. We did get a question relating to the giver count, whether we need a kiss count from the Melissa bot. Do we need a kiss count for Adam and Courtney? If someone wants to do that, reach out and let us know. We will. We can make guesses, Jess, if you think this is something to do. But if someone wants, I'm not going to be the one to count the kisses, though.
Yeah, I'm not going to keep track either. I was kind of terrible at the giver count. So, yeah, someone wants to keep a running tally and keep us honest. We saw at least 4 kisses this episode. So I think the over under on this is got to be around 50. Does that seem right?
Yeah, I was thinking the only trick is how long they last. But I'm thinking the 40 to 50 range is good, because we saw a lot of them. And if they, that sounds weird, but if they make it towards the end, there's going to be at least 3 to 4 kisses an episode.
And if they win the whole thing, like the last 10 minutes of the finale is just going to be them like making out.
Which might be, I don't know. I don't think this would be as fun as the giver count, but I did want to bring it up because that was entertaining. So let me see here. So we did have a few questions about how Dylan and Kwame got back when they lost the ferry. And I will say it's pretty simple. There was like we mentioned, by setting up the times and putting the teams together for the gondola ride, it guaranteed that if a team missed the ferry, they weren't screwed. And I think we're both okay with that. But that's how they were able to survive. And also, yeah, that was Heather McKay. And also Jeffrey Kay did bring up what you brought up, is that they may be in trouble if they can't get around.
there's a whole set of skills you need. You need a particular set of skills to excel on this program, and you have to be good at the tasks, but if you're not good at getting around, then it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, that's true. So any other questions? A lot of these are ones that we covered partially based on some of the great feedback that you all sent. But yeah.
I think a good one to go out on is from Jessica Frey here. She says, are there any places in Canada you want the race to visit? I tweeted this, but I hope they visit Gander and make a come from away themed leg, especially considering the theme of heroes. It could be a perfect destination. Now, Dan, are you familiar with the story of Gander?
I am not, but I think I would love to hear it.
There's a musical on Broadway right now called Come From Away that is about this story, but the town of Gander in Newfoundland, it's a really tiny town. On 9/11, when all of the airports in the U.S. were shut down, there were a whole bunch of planes that got diverted to this tiny airport in Gander, and the people of the town stepped up, and everybody that was on the planes, like, they put people up in their houses and took care of them for several days while everything got sorted out in the U.S. and the airports could be open again. And it's this really inspiring story, and I think that's an ideal destination for a heroes-themed race, especially since a lot of the Canadian hero type things we've already exhausted on previous seasons of Amazing Race Canada. Like, are we going to do something else with Terry Fox, or have we kind of, has that ship kind of sailed? So I think this is a great story that would make a very good destination.
Now, that is an interesting story. I had not heard that story. I actually was diverted on a plane on 9/11 to Vancouver. That was my one trip to Canada, if you can believe it. But I did not get to go to Gander, so not on the same level. But people in Canada were very nice and heroic when I was there. So,
Dan, you could have been a character in a Broadway musical.
Yeah, but overall, to answer, I think that's a great suggestion from Jessica. You know, for me, I'm going to speak a little more in general here, but they've visited some of the big cities. I don't need them to go to Toronto. I don't need them to go to Calgary. I don't need them to go to Montreal that often. Those are cool cities. I want them to go to places like Gander that I don't know anything about, that I maybe haven't heard of, or that, I mean, again, you could flip it and you could end up in Sudbury or something, or they can end up going to an indoor trampoline park. So there's always things that are unfortunate, but for me, I just want to see them go. Part of what I love about the show is learning about places in Canada I've never heard of, or that I only know a little about. So it just would be cool to find them, to continue to find kind of neat places that I'm like, that's amazing. I want to go there.
Yeah, really. I'm just interested to learn anything new about Canada and all of these great spots. They always find something cool to do there to celebrate some aspect of the country. And I'm really excited to see the Yukon. I'm glad they're finally going there. Next week's going to be a lot of fun. And hey, I wanted to put this call out, actually. If we have a listener who's from the Yukon or who has spent a lot of time there, I would love to talk to you about what that area is like. So get at us on Twitter if that's you. And maybe we can set up a short Skype call to talk about that, because it's an area of the country that I think not many people have been to. And it would be great to get an insider view on that.
Yeah. And that's a perfect example of the type of place that I was mentioning. Just, you know, and the next week looks fun. I mean, they're doing some sort of task involving the gold rush to get an express pass or something. Can dancing. I mean, there's so many possibilities for some places, and I would love to learn more, so that it's going to only make the show more interesting.
Yeah, for sure. So, couple of administrative notes before we go. We love to hear your feedback. We love it if you rate and review us in the iTunes store. I know we're on a couple of different feeds, so review the feed of your choice. We're happy to hear from you about how much you're enjoying the podcast, and it helps other people find us as well. We also enjoy hearing from you in the Rob is a Podcast patron Facebook group, which is a perk to people that support us on Patreon. To do that, you just go to robhasawebsite.com/Patreon and pledge a small amount of money every month. That gives you access to our patron-only Facebook group, where people circulate links for non-Canadians on how to watch the show. And we have comment threads that are always a lot of fun, and we like to interact with you there. And of course, you can always tweet at us. Tweeting's free. I am at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton. And thanks to everyone for all the questions on Twitter and even in the Facebook group. It was awesome this week, and keep it up. It's going to be a fun season.
Yeah, my heart is full. Like, if we get half as many questions next week, I will consider it a success. So I think that about covers everything. I want to extend my thanks one more time to Dan, who's truly a hero of podcasting. And thanks to all of you, my listeners, who are the real heroes of all of this. And we will see you next week.